loved the church and gave himself for her, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. Notice that he is assuming, the Apostle Paul, he's assuming that he's speaking to Christian men. He's not speaking to people that don't believe in Jesus. He's speaking to people who are Christians and says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. If he was speaking to non-Christians, what's the point of using the name of Jesus? Look at Jesus. And husbands, love your wife just as Christ loved the church. We have been speaking about women submitting to husbands and husbands being the head. Last week, after the service, somebody said to me, I just read a newspaper article yesterday that a vicar in England preached the same message you did, and half the church left. You're here. That's good. Speaking about man being the head of the woman, speaking about man being in leadership in marriage, speaking about the man having the authority in the home. Half the church left. But I want to emphasize when we speak about the headship of man over woman that no husband can possibly be a good leader unless he is a good follower. I think it is a horrible thing when you have a husband being the head of the wife, but the husband is cut off from his head. You see, in 1 Corinthians 11:3, it says, but I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ. And the head of woman is man. So yes, God has given man the leadership in the home, but there's nothing worse than when someone has the leadership in the home, but they do not know where they're going because they don't know Jesus Christ. They don't follow Jesus Christ. And in a sense, I would like to say that if you are not following Jesus Christ, why should your wife submit to you? I'm not saying that she shouldn't do it. For after all, in Peter it says, even if your husband does not obey the word, he might be won by your life. But what I am saying is that we're sometimes very keen on the wife submitting to the husband. But the question is, are we as men submitting to Jesus? See, it's very easy to drive our wives and say, we're going to do this and we're going to do that, while in reality, we're just fulfilling our desires and not the desires of Jesus Christ. And it is very important that we are honest with ourselves. If we are going to be leaders in the home, if we're going to be the authority in the home, that we ourselves are people who know Jesus intimately, who love Him, and who understand that He is the absolute authority in the home. So I would like to encourage, first of all, husbands, if we are going to be exercising leadership in the home, that we would exercise Christian leadership in the home, that we ourselves are followers of Jesus Christ. Can you imagine if I was the authority here, or that being the pastor here, but didn't follow Jesus Christ? And that is what's happened to many churches in the UK. There was an article in the United Kingdom that says, it is amazing. One third of the clergy no longer believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And it said, we have come to the place where the unfaithful are ruling over the faithful. The unfaithful are ruling over the faithful. And what do you have? You have people who exercise authority, but they've left the authority that's over them, the Word of God. And we cannot do that as husbands in the home. And our desire, if we are to be anything in this world, the first desire that we should have is to be the best Christian that we would grow in this Christian life that has been given to us, and it should manifest itself first and foremost in the way that we behave at home, in the way that we love our wives. Notice the balance again. Husbands, love your wives. Think of the tenderness that comes with that. Think of the balance in a culture where women were second-class citizens, that the Apostle Paul doesn't say, wives, submit to your husbands, and children, obey your parents in the Lord. But he says, but husbands, love your wives. In Colossians, it says, husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh towards them. Love your wives, another translation says, and be not bitter towards them. The tenderness of it all. So we see automatically that the controlling idea with the man in marriage needs to be love. It doesn't mean that the wife submits and doesn't love. I think in the submission, love is already taken for granted. But it does mean that the husband's controlling attitude in the marriage should be one of love. He is concerned about harmony, peace, and unity in the home. Love is the controlling idea. And great men, the greatest of men, are men who love their wives. When we think of presidents and rulers on the earth, that doesn't make a great man. What makes a great man is, what are they at home? What are they at home? Some of my favorite verses in the Bible. You know, sometimes the Bible encapsulates the life of a person in just a few words. It's astonishing to me to watch. Just a few words. And some of my favorite verses is this one. It's Isaac in Genesis 24:67. It says, then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent. That's where he's going to consummate the marriage. And it says, and he took Rebekah and she became his wife. And this is what it says about their relationship. And he loved her. If someone could wrap up your whole marriage, your whole attitude towards your wife, what would it be? And he was bitter towards her. He was moody. He was crazy. He was never at home. Or would it be, he loved her. I love that about Isaac. One of my favorite ones is 29:11. Because remember, with Jacob, Jacob's mom said, please go get a girl from our family. Please go get one from there. This is what we want you to have a relative, in a sense. And in a sense, the relative had to do also not just with genealogies; it had also to do with the relationship with God. And so he ventures on the journey to go find his wife in Panararam, northwest of where he was going. Incidentally, that was the verse that God used to take me to England and the northwest to go find my wife. You know, I didn't know that I would find my wife there. She just happened to be there, but. It says that Jacob looked at her. He fed the donkeys, or the animals, the sheep, or what was it? I forgot what it was, the animals. And it says this, that he saw her, he kissed her. Now, I don't think this was a romantic kiss yet. I don't. This is the way I picture this part. The way I picture this part is he's been journeying. He's kind of wondering, Lord, am I really going to find my family? I wonder if my family's, if my distant family, if the girls are attractive. And I think he saw Rachel. He's like, let me feed the flock. He gave him to drink. He opened the well. He says he kissed her. And I'm sure it was a brotherly kiss. And then it says, and he wept. He just thought, I can't believe it. She's wonderful. She just thought, wow. And it says afterwards, it says, he waited for her for 7 years. And it seemed like a few days because he loved her. He loved her. So he waited for her. The Bible shows great men. And the men who were great, and it always mentions Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all those three men were men that loved their wives. But you know what? The Bible also shows tragedy. Samson, a tragedy. Abnon. Have you ever heard Abnon? It's a horrible story. It says that he loved his stepsister. You know, he just loved her. And he says, come, I'm sick, take care of me. And as she came, he says, come. And he forced her and slept with her. And she said, please don't do this. This is going to be shameful in all of Israel. And he said, it doesn't matter. Boom. And he says that he was sick of love. And then it says that after that, with the same love that he had loved her, he hated her even more. Read it. 2 Samuel 13. Great men are men who love their wives. And a man is to be the authority, but the Christian husband should never become a tyrant, a dictator. Power, yes. Authority, yes. But in 2 Timothy 1:7, it says, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power. But lest, you know how it says, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Well, lest the power will be a corrupted power, it says, yes, of power he's given you a spirit, but of love. Lest the power should become tyranny. And of a sound mind, because the tendency of man might be to gravitate towards that, and the man needs to be a man that has self-control over his emotions and cannot be a bully in the house. Listen, guys. There's nothing worse for children. There's nothing worse for a wife in her frailty. That when a man makes havoc in the house with anger, fits of rage, threatenings, moodiness, everybody just cringes. I still cringe to this day when I experience fights. I still cringe. Everything within me just shuts down because I have seen what it is to have people in a house who are afraid of their dad, afraid of their husband, rather than being completely secure in that relationship. Because as one woman said in the next to the casket of her husband, he had died, he was a general in the army or something like that, and he said, listen, look at this man. One thing he never did, he never hurt me. And there should be in the home should be a safety. The home should be a place where everybody feels safe, everybody feels loved, there's kindness that rules there, and there's no room in the Christian marriage for a little dictator there who keeps everyone on their toes and everyone afraid. Love needs to be the controlling principle in the Christian marriage. But we must define love. We must talk about what love is. Actually, let me go back really quick before we talk about what love is. This tyranny thing is just horrible. We had a student here, and this is how you see how I feel about this. We had one student here at one point, several semesters ago, who in his room, he would sneak out at night. And obviously, it was natural that the guys would tell what was going on. We need to know if something like that is going on. And the guy threatened several times the roommates. And the roommates were scared. No one should have to go to sleep at night scared of what might happen to them in their own house. And I know women that have been woken up at night being choked by their husbands. I know women where things go flying. I know women that cringe when yelling comes their way. They die within. And that should not be in the Christian home. But we must define love, because you know what? I tell Loretta, I love you. And she says, show me. It's true. We throw the word out so lightly. I love you. And we live in a society where love is really lost its meaning. Think about it. Think of the song lyrics that carry the word love in it. How many? Think of the poems that carry the word love in it. Think of the movies that carry love in it. Think of the books, the romantic novels or whatever books that talk about love. Think of the advertisements that talk about love. But I would venture to say that in history, there's never been a time where there's been more talk about love, but never a time where love has been misunderstood more. Because at the end of the day, look at what is going on. The people that write these songs, the people that write these poems, the people that write are in these movies, the people that write these books, the people that make these advertisements are people that have been divorced 3, 4, 5, 6 times. Or maybe never married, just sort of. And before they even get married, they make preempt agreements. Yeah, that. They make agreements. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. But what is the love that Paul speaks about when he says, husbands, love your wives? I think it's a fair question. What is he talking about when he says, husbands, love your wives? And I would like to venture to say that he takes at least, when he says, husbands, love your wives, he takes two loves for granted. And then there's a third. And you're probably thinking to yourself, man, Raph, you're confusing me. You mean three loves? Well, you guys, I'm sure, bought a book, The Five Languages of Love, and that's not confusing at all, is it? But if I say there's three loves, all of a sudden it's like, what you talking about, Raph? But the reality that there's three loves, one of them is not mentioned in the Bible, but is part of the marriage relationship. And it's not mentioned in the Greek, but it is mentioned in its context in the whole Bible, this love. The second one is mentioned in the Bible, and the third one is the one that is the most important in the Bible, which is the one that Paul refers to when he says, husbands, love your wives. But I want to look first at the love which he actually takes for granted that these Christians have for one another, these Christian couples. The first one is eros. He takes for granted that these married couples have eros in their relationship. And that's a Greek word. But in the English, it's where you get the word erotic. Yes. Erotic. Erotica. When you think of sexual or desire, when you think of carnal, selfish. And I'd like to say that although this sexual entirely, this desire, this want appeals entirely to the flesh, we get the word erotic from it, it is carnal, it is selfish, I would like to venture to say that it is not necessarily wrong within the context of marriage. Can a Christian man marry any Christian woman? Can a Christian man marry any Christian woman? I would like to venture to say no. I remember when I was in Bible school. I believe that you can be unequally yoked, even within the Christian thing. But I remember when I was in Bible school in Austria, there was, you know, there was this girl who liked me, and she was reading the Bible, and the Lord told her that I was the one. And I thought, wow, so she told me. I went to speak at one of my classes, and I went mute. I couldn't remember a thing I was going to say. And then she was reading Luke 1, where the guy had gone mute. And so she thought, well, Raphael is the guy. So she told me this, and there I was in the cafeteria talking to this girl. And as I'm talking to this girl, she's telling me, yeah. And I was reading this, and oh man, is this gonna be wonderful? And we're gonna get married. And I'm looking at her, and I'm praying, and I'm thinking, oh God, does it have to be her? Does it have to be her? I'll deny myself. I'll marry her for the sake of the kingdom. But I would like to venture to say that that is wrong. It's wrong to marry a person that you're not attracted to. Something that Linda said to me once when we were talking about how will we know when the one comes. And she looked at me and she's like, don't you think you love her? I was like, oh, that'll be nice. But you know what? This sexual attraction is part of this physical attraction, is part of the Christian life. The Christian should fall in love. Shouldn't be this mechanical thing. Proverbs 5 says, girls or older people, if you don't want to listen to just some stuff, just going to have to go like this because the Bible talks about it. Proverbs 5:15 and 9-19, it says, drink water from your own cisterns and running water from your own well. Should your fountains overflow, streams of water in the streets, let them be your own and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed. And rejoice with the wife of your youth as a loving deer, as a graceful doe. Let her breast satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. For why should you be enraptured by an immoral woman? Be enraptured. Be sexually attracted to your wife. 1 Corinthians 7:3. I never had your attention so much in my whole time of pastoring. This is crazy. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 3 through 5, it says, let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another except for consent, with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Man, do not deprive one another except for fasting and praying. Wait a minute, how long do you fast and pray? It's not like I spent a week or 2 weeks fasting. Listen, guys, sex should be a part of the Christian marriage. Attraction, love. Be careful of the subtle heresy of monasticism. This is what these women had fallen into, these men. They had fallen into the trap that we are Christians now. We can't have sex with one another. And Paul says, oh no, do not deprive one another. It's part of the Christian marriage. It's part of the Christian marriage. There should be physical attraction. But Paul's also speaking about a different love that he takes for granted. He takes for granted that these people had physical attraction. And that is natural. I mean, it happens. And it's okay as long as it's for the one woman, for the one man. The Bible says the bishop must be a one-woman man. The deacon must be a one-woman man. In other words, he belongs to one person. And all those passions are great if they're funneled in the right direction. They become adultery. They become fornication. They become all these things if outside of that marriage. But there's liberty within that marriage. And it is to be enjoyed. And be careful, husbands. And I'm sure it goes both ways. I mean, I guess they talk about the woman having headaches, you know? But I met a woman who would become furious because her husband would not even look at her. She would hope. She would sit there at night hoping that he might turn over, and he wouldn't do it. And she just furious at the frustration of feeling unloved. And the Bible says there's nothing worse on the earth than an unloved woman. And I think you have no right to deprive your wife. Yeah. You have no right. We need to give each other that physical affection. But the Bible's, and Paul takes for granted this second love, which Paul is also assuming that is there, which is phileo, fondness. You remember when Peter was, when Peter had denied Jesus, and Jesus was restoring Peter, and Jesus asked Peter, "Do you agape me? Do you have this divine love for me?" And Peter said, "You know that I phileo you. You know what that means? You know that I'm fond of you. You know that I love being with you. You know that I love walking with you. You know that I love listening to you. You know that I love everything that you are." And he says, "Yes, but do you agape me?" And he says, "Lord, you know that I phileo you. I'm fond of you, but I just don't have this incredible... I wish I agaped you, but I phileo you. I'm fond of you." You know what? The Christian marriage should have that fondness. You should marry someone you love to be with. And if you marry someone, you should love to be with that person. And if you don't, you should fight to love to be with that person. Now, I know sometimes it seems impossible, and there's times in my own marriage where I felt, Brian Brodesson said to me, "My favorite person to be with is Cheryl." And I remember thinking to myself, that is far from my attitude right now. That is far from where I'm at. Although I was with Loretta a lot, it wasn't easy being with Loretta a lot. But we should work towards our best friends, our partner being the person that we love to be with. Having a friendship, heirs together of life, things in common, same attraction, enjoyment of same things, natural affinities. There should be things that we like to do together. And Paul is assuming that these people are like that. They love being with one another. You know, Loretta and I love to get in the car together. We'll drive, and she loves to ride. I love to drive. You know, some people would like to go hiking. Well, Loretta and I are happy just at home reading books. On the other hand, Carolyn and Trevor, they like to be sleeping out on the streets somewhere and, you know, camping or something like that. But there are things that we enjoy doing together. And the Christian marriage should be like. Think of Peter and Mitch. I mean, they've been married 65 years almost. They love being with one another. Think of Ruth and Fred. They love being with... They had their arguments, but they love being with one another. Think of Marlene and John. Think of Andrew, and I'm talking about widows now, but I'm also talking about people that have been around with their couples for a long time. A fondness. They love being together. I love watching Peter and Mitch just walking hand in hand after 65 years. And think to myself, I want to be like that if I make it. But there's a friendship. And you know, Loretta and I, our dream was always to get married and grow old together with somebody. Be pilgrims together through the earth. And you don't want to be married to a hateful woman, and you don't want to be married to a bitter man. And we need to fight in our own hearts to cultivate the fondness. And the Apostle Paul takes phileo for granted. He takes for granted that people are going to choose their partners on the matter of physical attraction and on the prospect also of having this friendship with someone, assuming that they're going to pick partners on the basis of that. You should not pick a partner that you hate being with. But it goes further. Because they are Christian husbands, he says to them, husbands, love your wives. And he uses the word agape. This is where it takes it all to a different level. You know, you can have a successful marriage on the first two levels. You can have a successful marriage on a physical attraction and a fondness, but it will never be raised to the level of a Christian marriage filled with the Spirit of God, to that agape love. And he's speaking to people where he says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church. Notice in verse 18, I think it is, it says, and do not be drunk with wine, in which is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. And no doubt he's speaking to husbands that are filled with the Spirit. And we need the Spirit of God to love like this. And no doubt the fruit of the Spirit is love. And where you're going to see a Christian husband that is filled with the Spirit is not going to be manifested, someone that's filled with the Spirit, with how much they know about the Lord, how much they know about the Word. It's not even going to be the fact that they speak in tongues or sing in tongues. It's not going to be in the fact that they're a great pastor or a great teacher or a great missionary. The way that you're going to see that a person is filled with the Spirit is how they love their wives. That is where it will be seen. The fruit of the Spirit is love, and where it's going to show itself first and foremost is how I behave at home. Tough one, isn't it? Tough one. Because at home is we are what we are. My mom used to tell me, it's amazing, Raph. You are nice to everybody but me. You are nice to everybody. You are the most polite, the most graceful. You are just wonderful to everybody but me. That's before I was married. But the reality is, I didn't know the Lord. But now I don't have that liberty. What I am is what I am with my family. And if the Spirit of God does not work mightily with me in my family, then maybe I just don't have the Spirit of God. And notice it says, even as Christ loved the church. Now, this is interesting because in a sense the Apostle Paul says, in order for you to be a good husband, in order for you to be a husband, a Christian husband, you have to know the love of Christ. How can you imitate how Christ loved the church if you don't know how Christ loved the church? So this is where doctrine is important. This is where teaching, Christian teaching is so important. We must give time to read the Gospels. You know, you can read all three Gospels in one evening. All four, sorry. I just don't agree with the fourth one, you know. You can read all four Gospels in an evening. You could choose to meditate on the life of Jesus and just see how Christ, what He did for His church, for what He did with those believers, how He treated them, how He cherished them, how He washed their feet, how He loved on them. You can meditate on that. And as you see the doctrine of Jesus in the church, you will be able to love your wives like Christ loved the church. You can't imitate what you haven't seen. And doctrine and experience should be something that is growing in our life. And in turn, the way we grow as Christians and the way we grow as husbands should be manifest, should be something that we notice that we're growing in. Let me read to you what Jimmy, we're going to get real personal today, what Jimmy wrote Heidi's dad. Liz's dad. I'm so sorry. Yeah, you know, yesterday it was Christina that Christina was on one side and someone had Alicia. And I said, Christina, give me a kiss. Christina, give me a kiss. Christina, give me a kiss. And I gave Alicia a kiss and everyone's laughing around me. I'm like, what are they laughing at? And then I realized, I looked at Christina. I go, oh, no. You know? But Jimmy wrote Liz's dad something. He says, I promise you that I would never do anything to ever intentionally hurt her in any way. I only want God's best for her, and I will guard her heart even above my own. I would never, ever ask a woman to enter into a Christian dating relationship if my future intentions were not marriage. I would not waste either of our time. Isn't that sweet? But it's very easy at the beginning, isn't it? It's true. It's very easy to write something like that at the beginning until all of a sudden the heat gets turned up. And I think Jimmy's going to be a great husband. I've watched them as a family man, and I think he's going to be a great husband. But it's very easy to say something like that in the beginning. And I think it's noble, but the question is, where are we going? Are we going to pursue that after the first year of marriage? Are we going to pursue that after the second year of marriage? Are we going to pursue it after the 10th year of marriage? And I want to read to you something else. Martin Lloyd-Jones, when he was about 50 or 60, and I read this once before here, but I want to read it again. Martin Lloyd-Jones wrote this. He wrote this to Betham, his wife. He says, I cannot describe the various feelings I have experienced since I saw you last on Waterloo Station. And I'd better not try to do so. Let me just say this much. Thinking of you gives me endless happiness. And I am more certain than ever that there is no one in the world like you, nor even approaching you. Not in all the world. I don't know if I'm losing my reason, like that poor Mrs. JT in St. Bridges, but I often feel that you are with me and that I could almost talk to you. I have at times tried to imagine where you all three are, that's with the daughters, and what you are doing. I would give the whole world if you could have been with me. But there, I must be content to look forward to some four weeks today. Then I shall be back with you again. Looking into your eyes and sitting beside you, I think I shall be perfectly content just to be with you and Elizabeth and Anne. Just sitting with the three of you and doing nothing else. I have said in my letter telegram that I am sending you all my love. And here I am, saying it once more. You shall give some bits of it to the two girls. I have been thinking of 11 years ago tonight when we went together to Covent Garden and then back to Dilly's. I thought at that time that I loved you, but I had to live with you for over 10 years to know you properly and so to love you truly. I know that I'm deficient in many things and must at times disappoint you. That really grieves me. But I am trying to improve. But believe me, if you could see my heart, you will be amazed at how great is my love. I hope you know, indeed, I know that you know, in spite of all my failings, I can do nothing but say again that from the human standpoint, I belong entirely to you. Isn't that wonderful? I mean, this is 11 years later. And this is what I'm trying to say with this. At the beginning, Jimmy's saying this. After 11 years, Lloyd-Jones writes that. That is what should be happening in our life. We should be growing as Christians. We should be growing as husbands. And the exhortation of Paul to the Christian husband is, husbands, love your wives. Husbands, love your wives. Even as Christ loved the church. Romans 7:4 says, therefore, my brethren, you also have become dead to the law through the body of Christ, that you may be married to another. As Christians, we're all married to Jesus Christ. I know it sounds weird for us guys to think of being married to a guy, but the reality is that in the purity of who God is, we are the bride of Christ. And we need to look at the teaching of what His attitude is, what His actions are towards us. In order to understand what His attitude, where our attitude should be towards our wives. Now let me ask you a question. How do you look at your wife? What is your attitude towards her? What is your thoughts of your heart towards her? Look at Jesus' attitude towards His wife. It says, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for her, that He might sanctify and cleanse her." Do you notice something? That He might sanctify and cleanse her. That means she's still dirty. That means she's still in rags. That means she's still unworthy. Christ loved the church before the church deserved the love. Christ loved the church before the church actually deserved the love. In spite of our unworthiness, in spite of our deficiencies. Yes, as husbands, what is your attitude towards your wife when you see inconsistencies, when you see weaknesses, when you see things that you could criticize? And tell me, and I'll tell you, my wife has it hard. She's married to a pastor. Yes, she'll have to tell me sometimes, quit the preaching. And be careful of thinking, oh, I wish I was married to a pastor. He would just love me so much. You don't live with me. And this goes for me. When I see inconsistencies in Loretta, when I see things, certain things, I'm not called to set her right on everything. I'm called to love her in spite of who she is. While we were yet sinners, Christ loved us. He died for the ungodly. Notice, it says He gave Himself for her. Sometimes with love, we stop at desire. We have great desires. Jesus didn't stop at desire. It says He gave Himself for her. He sacrificed for her. You know what I mean by that? When you have great desires of what you would do for your wife, but you never do it. It says He gave. See, the first love, Eros, takes. It's selfish. The second one is selfish. It's just because you like being with that person that you are with that person. But the third one is the one that goes beyond it. It doesn't think about what it's going to get. It thinks about what it's going to give, what it's going to put into the marriage. Not self-centered, not thinking about me, 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 but the attitude towards the wife, he is proud of her. He rejoices in their relationship. He's triumphant. As a matter of fact, if you turn to Ephesians 3:10, just a couple pages over, look what it says in 3:10. To the intent that now the manifold wisdom of God might be made known to the church, the principalities and powers in the heavenly places. Notice that He might be known by the church to the principalities and powers in the heavenly places. Jesus is going to present the church, as faulty as it is, blameless, be in front of the demons, in front of the angels, in front of His Father, in front of everybody. He's going to present her and say, look how wonderful she is. And in a sense, the Christian man should be like that. Proud to take his wife here. Proud to show her off there. Proud to taking care of her. Cherishing her. Just like Christ loved the church. Not ashamed of her. Not bitter with her. Not you stay home, I'll go there. But rather longing to be with her. Rejoicing over her. Do you realize that Christ rejoices over you? And husbands, if He can rejoice over you, if He is proud of you, if He loves you like He loves you, if He is so good to you, He wants you to be that to your wife. And as you understand the love of God, If you understand, as you understand the love of Jesus for you, it should reciprocate by, or rather work itself out by you loving your wife just as you have been loved. His attitude towards you, his banner over you is love. I've told Loretta before, and we've had, and you guys know, and I talk about it, we've had our rages. But I have to ask myself, and I've asked her, what do you want from life? Because you said, in wealth, in sickness, in riches, in poor, and whatever it is, what do you want from life? Where are you going? Because you can work on having not just a marriage and not just a good marriage, but you can work on having a great marriage. And your job doesn't matter. Your social status doesn't matter. Your health doesn't matter. What matters, and you promised this, that you would work on a good marriage, on a great marriage. Where are you going? What part does that have in your life? Do you think about the future? Do you think about where you're going? Are you going to wake up one day, the kids will be gone, and you looked at your wife, and I've told Loretta this. I said, I'm a pastor, and you're my helper here, and I love you dearly, but I don't want you working so much. In a sense, we work, and don't get me wrong, I'm not promoting laziness with her, but what I'm saying, I don't want to wake up one day, church is gone, ministry's gone, kids, if they've come, are gone, but I don't know who you are. Who are you? I don't want that. I want to grow together with Loretta. And I've also told her this. If I died today, would you have any regrets of what you could have done better? If you died today, would I have any regrets? Live with your partners as if it was the last day. Because at the end of the day, you do love your partner. But sometimes you just get self-centered and you don't think about how fleeting time is. So I want to finish with this. Husbands, love your wives. If you do anything this week worth doing, love your wives. Be kind to them. Be patient with them. Be tender towards them. Be joyful towards them. Give to them. Give your time. Give your body. Give your life. And have a marriage. Might not have anything else. Mary and Joseph, what did they have? A good marriage. And better, a house with crumbs. I'm talking about poor, very poor, with peace, than a house full of luxury with fighting. But the choice is yours. The choice is yours. And for you single ones, there's nothing worse than being single and wishing you were married. To be married and wishing you were single. Pick carefully. Yes, eros, physical attraction. Yes, phileo, fondness, friendship, love to hang out together. But above all, what lifts the marriage to a glorious marriage, and this is where I desire, is that agape love, the fruit of the Spirit within a marriage. If it challenges you, it challenged me first. Let's pray. Father, we thank you so much, Lord, for your goodness in our life. You loved us in spite of us.